Be sincere in your friendships. Avoid insincere flattery. Be entirely honest. That is a big one in girls. Often they tend to have a lot of insincere flattery to make the other person feel better. Avoid it. You read in Proverbs all the times that it talks about flattery and the bad connotation flattery has and how little good it is for you. And it might do something for you in that area. Build her spiritual life up, not her self life. If she struggles with something, don't always say, yeah, I just know what you mean. We just, you know, sometimes there's room for understanding. But you need to build her up, encourage her, not just say, I'm always in the same boat. Sometimes we try so hard to be understanding, we're absolutely no help at all. Never do something that will pressure your friend to go against her parents' wishes or her own conscience. The truest sign of a friend is one that truly honors the other person's feelings about something, her convictions about something, or honors your friend's parents. Don't do something that is going to pressure her to doing something that she cannot conscientiously do or rightfully do. Friendship is accepting your friend at face or heart value, not trying to change her so that she will appear cool enough for you. Who is the most loved among us? Is it not she who accepts and befriends herself to popular and unpopular ones, to noticed and unnoticed ones? When I was at the youth group, with a youth group in the Mennonite circles I was acquainted with, there was one girl that was so loved. We sort of had little cliques here and there, but this girl, you could hardly figure out where she belonged. And it seemed like every group really wanted her. She was so friendly, so accepting. It didn't seem to matter where you came from or who you were associating yourself with. She was just a gem, and she was loved, she was wanted. It didn't seem, I don't know, there was another girl in the youth group that was more wanted to be around with than her. Now, relating to those that we clash with, because that's inevitable, we cannot go through this life without meeting people that we really clash with at times. Is there someone that comes to your mind when I ask you if there's someone you kind of dislike or you have a struggle in accepting? Do you realize that that is the very one that God placed in your life to make you a better person? Do you realize that is who God is referring to when he says, what you have done to the least of these, you have done to me? Because in your mind, you are considering her the least of these. If you dislike someone, there's no getting around it. You consider them a least of these. And that is what God is referring to when he says, as you treat that person, that is how you are treating me. Sometimes we need to use our imagination and look past that person and pretend it's Jesus Christ and relate to that person accordingly. It is only through rubbing shoulders with difficult people that we can become like Christ with his gentle, humble attitude. Take courage. Rise to the challenge. It's when other people offend us that we suddenly realize the capabilities of hatred and bitterness that we have in our own hearts. If everybody would love us, we would never realize how much in need of Christ we are. And it's when other people offend us that we're just amazed at the amount of anger that surges up in us. Take courage, rise to the challenge. This is what Christ is bringing into your life to get you to totally overcome those. And if you don't have situations like that, it's no way possible to overcome them. We will never learn humility unless we look to Christ. Our heart does not naturally watch Christ 100% of the time. God lets difficult people be the means of seeing ourselves what we really are outside of Christ. People you don't like is a direct attack on God because he made that person. He loves that person as much as he loves you, believe it or not. He's not a prejudiced God. You're not approving of someone else's actions or their clothing? This is an important one to remember. We will never, ever draw that person to us by having a self-righteous, judgmental attitude. We will never draw that person towards wanting to be or dress like we do. Because what they see is distasteful in you. A self-righteous attitude is absolutely distasteful to anyone. You need to have the attitude, what is that to thee, follow thou me. Make sure your struggle with her isn't deep inside jealousy or envy, because you cannot be like her. Let your radiancy and your contentment win her over and be attracted to what you have. But if you do have a concern and you feel like you need to rebuke or exhort someone, don't go until you are totally free from attitudes. Attitude of jealousy or attitudes of looking down on someone. And once you are rid of those attitudes, that would be the hardest thing you could do, is go to her. And it is only when it is that hard for you that you can say it with a humble attitude that she can receive it. I want to read a little bit about our egos. One of our biggest problems in life is our egos with our friends. I have a book here, The Gentle Ways of the Beautiful Woman, and this lady has a chapter in here, Breaking the Back of Your Own Ego. I just want to read a little bit to you from it. Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed, happy, to be congratulated are those who understand exactly what they are and don't try by pretense or posing to deny it or cover it up." Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden," that verse. Do you know what your burden is that Jesus is saying to come to me about? It's a burden that is all between this ear and that ear. Most people carry it, are heavy laden by it, are dragged down and depressed and discouraged and exhausted by it all their lives. It's the burden of ego. How much emotional energy do you spend protecting yourself from every possible slight, challenging every word spoken by either friend or enemy which demeans you, cringing under every cool look, tossing at night because someone else seems preferred over you? How much emotional energy do you spend trying to doctor up your image and look good to your friends? Trying to say what's cool, trying to do only what's accepted, trying to appear only in a way that will make you admired, trying to sustain a subtle publicity campaign that says you are more, do more, have more. It's very exhausting, isn't it? Quit pretending. Quit striving, my dear child. Quit trying to be some cocky little god competing with me. This is Christ saying it. Maybe, worst of all, some cocky little religious god. Come down off your silly, riggedy throne. Only my Father is worthy of a throne. Bow to him only, and give him all the glory, and let him be all and do all in you and for me. As I was reading that chapter, I was so burdened about my own life, and I was just thinking, oh, my ego of wanting to appear spiritual to my husband, my ego of not wanting people to think I'm a complainer, my ego of just... There's just so many things I struggle with personally in my ego. And I wrote a prayer I thought I would read to you. My desire is to be willing to be in the background of my family, my friends, my relatives, and my church, but also willing to be in the forefront. Sometimes I do desire forefront attention, but often I struggle with wanting to be way in the background where no criticism can find me and rake away my pride by accusations. Oh, ego, what a burdened lot is thine. How thou canst wreak havoc in the mind. You cause tossing bodies during the night watches. You cause furrowed brows by day and minds that snap and ulcers that burn, troubled stormy thoughts, angry billows, bowed heads, haughty eyes, crushing blows. O ego, thy burden is too heavy. I fly to one who is meek and lowly and tosses thy burden aside. O Christ, what a freedom in thee, lightness, airy feet, conscience clear, untroubled honesty, sound sleep, clear countenances, well of water ever springing. O Christ, who is like thee in all the earth? None but thee, O Christ, none but thee. Okay, now I have something else to share. Sometimes we really desire a closeness with the Lord, and we say, Lord, please somehow make me closer with you, that I know you and I know your presence more and I experience it more. And then God brings pressure into our life, maybe by someone else that is really putting pressure on our life, and we are realizing our feelings of bitterness and hatred inside. And instead of finding Christ as our sufficiency, that is what God is bringing into our life, that we can know Christ better. But we feel a little pressure inside, then we go and we share with someone. First of all, we might pray. We pray to God, God, I'm having a struggle with this. Would you please help me? And just help me not to have bitterness and forgiveness, and that I could forgive her. And then we get up. And we still have that pressure. We didn't really feel released just saying that to God. So we call our best friend up, or we talk to, you know, someone that's close to us, and we tell them the whole story. And do you know what you just did? You rejected and replaced Christ by your friend. The very thing that Christ knew that is going to draw you closer to Him than anything else, you went and you let the pressure inside of you spill out by saying it to somebody else. And that pressure was supposed to be the very thing that draws you close to Christ. I want to share something with you. Some time ago, I was feeling a tremendous amount of pressure in my life by someone. And I struggled so deeply. I don't know if anything I yearn to do more than call up my mom and just tell her what I'm going through. I longed to tell Mom what I was going through and just have her comfort me and encourage me, but just to let it out to somebody else so that they know that I'm really struggling. I felt guilty calling my mom because I knew that if I share this with my mom, this other person is going to be lowered in her opinion. And I could not conscientiously bring myself to do that. I just felt like, is it really right put that on my mom? And this pressure grew so great inside of me, it was just about crushing. One night I went to bed and I couldn't even sleep. And it was when it got so great I couldn't carry it anymore, and I knew I couldn't spill it out to other people. I started praying, and I prayed like I don't very often pray. And I said, God, I choose to forgive. You have got to help me in this. And I started really, really going to Christ, not just superficially praying to Him and then taking my burden off by giving it to someone else. It was amazing. Within minutes, that burden was gone. And I, for days, and even now yet, I feel like I'm living in the light of a closeness with Christ, in going through a crisis that I would not know had I shared this with my mother and taken the burden off of my heart. And my encouragement to you is this. We often think, well, friends are to share, and they are, and we encourage each other. But there are things that are not to be shared to your friends because they are human beings, and nobody is capable of taking that burden except God Himself. And the very things God brings into your life to draw you closer to Him, let it draw you closer to Him. Let the pressure become so great till you know you do not have the ability to handle it anymore. And when that happens, that's when you go to Christ and you find His fulfillment. I found that out after we moved here. I struggled so tremendously. At times, at the thought of not having more children. And it was because of the aloneness that I felt in the struggle that made me go to Christ, because suddenly it dawned on me that nobody can really take this burden from me. And I shared with my husband, and my husband could comfort me, but it didn't take the pain away from me. And I started realizing just what for God God is. One evening it was so crushing. I was in bed and I just prayed and prayed. And I said, God, I cannot take this anymore. And that's the thing. We humans cannot handle a lot of pressure. Just don't let it spill out to other people. Sometimes you might need to, but not nearly as often as you think. Let it go to Christ, because I took that burden to Christ. And I'll tell you this, I feel sometimes like I'm surely one of the happiest women in the world. He so completely answered my prayer, because I said, I cannot be happy, God. You have to do this for me. And he took that burden. He did. It is rarely overwhelming for me, if at all, anymore. And it is through those things. If you just discover how real and how powerful he is, dare not to tell your friend the next time. Go to him. Okay, our boyfriends. I talked about the keeping of our heart. As we get 12 years old, we wake up to the love nature, or a little younger. Our heart is like an enclosed bubble of liquid affection. Guard that affection jealously. Keep it for only one man. I will have to go faster over this, so I'm going to be reading a lot. Please bear with me. Many girls spill and splash it on this one and that one till their hearts are empty and disillusioned. They can hardly, if at all, recognize the right man when he comes. And then they need to try and try to work up affectionate feelings to go with their commitment. There is a wonder and miracle of deep happiness that occurs when for the first time you know that you love a man, any man loves you. There's no denying that. Many girls are impatient and they try to make this happen. They use their imagination full tilt all the time. And because of age or circumstances, the tiny romance fails after a bit. And then they switch to another and another until they feel wearied, old and disillusioned long before their time. They cannot resurrect those wondering, awed feelings for the right one when he comes. It is totally unfair to your future husband. Many times you just think of yourself and you think, well, I can handle it. I can work up these affectionate feelings when the time comes. You are being unfair to your future husband by spilling your affection right and left to different boys. Would you like to know that you are the 12th girl in line when your husband comes along that he's spilling his affection out on, and he truly felt very affectionate towards 12 girls before you? Wouldn't you fear that you wouldn't meet up to his requirements or quite what some of those other 12 were? Be fair to your husband. I want to warn you. If you spill your affections before the right one comes, you are setting yourself up for marriage problems. You will compare how you feel towards him with how you felt towards the others. It is unfair to you and to him. You will be puzzled. You won't know if you love him or if you don't love him. You are setting yourself up for heartbreaks. Another thing to remember is girls do tend to take flirtations much more seriously than boys do. And many times boys don't mean a lot, and girls just take it to their heart, and it just, oof, that's the one I will pour my affection onto when there's nothing to it in the boy's mind. You need to guard your heart, like I was saying, until the right one comes along. You say, well, how do I guard my heart? One way to guard your heart is to be very careful in how you relate to a boy in your conversations. It is not advisable for a girl to share her deepest feelings to a boy. Don't share your struggles and your victories and the things that really affect the depth of your heart. Do not share those things with a boy. There is something about open communication and sharing that draws one heart to another, and you need to guard your heart against that. Another thing, you guard your eyes. There is power in eyes. If you laugh with a boy, looking in his eyes all the time, there is something that just droop a knot is tied, just that easily. And that is one way you need to guard your heart. If a man or a boy looks at you long or if you start laughing or something, just drop your eyes, guard your heart, and don't let those love knots be tied by mutual eye gazing. 1 Timothy 2:9 says, adorn yourself with shamefacedness. Shamefacedness comes in that with eyes. Don't have bold eyes that gaze, that you know, tie these knots of love. Number three, how to guard your heart is never imagining something that didn't happen, and I brought that out before. Number four, do not put yourself in the way of temptation. Dark cars, riding alone, maybe horseback riding, romantic situations that you think are kind of romantic, avoid them. You do not know your own heart sometimes, and sometimes you're infatuated before you realize it. Do not read romance novels or watch videos that awaken that desire in your heart to have something before it's time or before God gives it to you. It is good, though, to learn how to relate to men and boys because it stimulates our thinking. Our world isn't quite as narrow. When we relate to them, we get their perspective on things, and just keep the conversation not on silly things, but more on maybe, should I call it global events, or things that neither touch the heart very deeply, but not stuff that is just light and frivolous either. Just, you know, stuff that's more like global events. Or it helps us in knowing and appreciating our strengths and our weaknesses as women. We need men, and we need to learn how to relate to them. They see things differently than we do, and we need their wisdom. How do I relate to a flirt? That is often a girl's question. First of all, if a boy has no reserve around you or very little reserve around you, the fault lies with you. It's that simple. Girls bemoan the fact that this boy acts so daring with me. All they're doing is telling on themselves. The fault lies with you if a boy goes way out of boundaries with you. He would not dare go out of boundaries with you if you would be in your place. A truly respectable, reserved girl naturally brings the highest respect and actions out of both godly and ungodly men. I mean, you can walk the streets and the longest-haired hippie will graciously open your door for you if you are a respectable woman. A reserved girl makes boys act like gentlemen. If you flirt, you might get their flirtations back, but they won't feel a deep respect for you. They just won't. It doesn't work that way. In the world, flirts do get married. You think, well, you know, what are you trying to say? I see a lot of people that are flirty and they get married. And it's true, they do get married. But you look at the world's marriages, often once a flirt has married a flirt, the attraction is gone because he's got you now and he doesn't have respect for you that would hold you together. Flirting is not respect. You think someone's flirting with you, that does not say he admires you or respects you. How do I act respectable and reserved? Number one, hold yourself aloof from body contact with any man before you get married. Do not slap, hug, flop carelessly against any boy. And I'm saying this to all of you. If you're old enough to be in this room today, you're old enough to do this. You do not slap, hug, or flop carelessly against any boy. Allow yourself to go no further than a simple handshake. Dress in an unassuming way that totally prohibits lustful glances. You want respect? Dress in a way that you are not giving someone a chance to have lustful glances towards you, and you will have respect. Never allow yourself to get involved in a fishy situation where gossip could arise. Nip any flirtation by a man by avoiding him a while after. If he wants to be around you, he'll learn very fast not to flirt with you. But in that, be respectful. You have a full right as a girl to be frosty. You have a full right and you need to be frosty. at times. You do not be totally yourself around a boy. You need to hold back your inside emotions. You need to keep them in check. And if he overrides that, you have a perfect right to be a little frosty if he tries to flirt. But do it in a respectful way. Don't, some girls get this haughty way, you know, and that just kind of tickles their amusement, and they'll try it again, and you just get haughty, and it's actually a roundabout way of flirting. Be respectful, but just nip it at the bud by going away, not letting him be around you if he's going to act that way. If smiling at a fellow, let it be a free, impartial smile, not a coy one. Avoid sauciness. Sometimes we want to be cute and we're saucy, and all we do is appear a little vulgar. Okay, our strangers. Before I go on to that, I surely, with all these hours of being up here, can honor my husband a little bit. Some girls feel like if I don't do anything to bring somebody my way, I will never have a chance. That is totally false. If you give yourself in God's hands, who arranges all people in all circumstances by however he wants to, you have the biggest chance of getting married. If he wants you married. Did you know that? Because he is moving the chess pieces. I so much had to give up my dreams when we left the Mennonite church, and some of the things I say to you might seem contradictory. Well, how could you be this type of person and this type of person in all in your short lifetime? Well, I had a lot of growing up to do. A lot of the stuff that I was relating to you that I went through as a girl was through some of the Mennonite churches, and leaving them was what brought growth out in my life and where I learned the other side of it. And I had to give up this thought of having anything to do with getting a husband. Thank you. I totally gave it up within mere months, maybe 3 months after we left the church, and I had put absolutely everything on the altar. God sent Daniel my way. I did not know him, not very well. What I saw in him, I appreciated. He lived in another church, hundreds of miles away, another state. I can honestly look back and I can see I had absolutely nothing to do with getting him. I never once tried to attract him to me. And God knew who I needed. He brought a man. I told him recently, I said, Daniel, sometimes my body might feel like 80 years old, but I said, you make my spirit dance and sing like a 15-year-old. And that is what God will do. If you break your heart and you let him do the choosing for you, he will bring someone that is much more perfect than you can ever imagine for you. So take courage. Don't try to win a person. Leave it up to God. Okay, how do we relate to our strangers? In church, one friendly soul can bring another seeking, groping soul to church again and again, and finally to Christ. Once again, remember the golden rule when you go to another church. How do we relate to strangers at home with our visitors? One of the greatest witnesses in the world is a family where children are friendly and reach out to others. Remember, your countenance and your friendliness is often your way of winning souls for Christ. You don't have the opportunity all the young men do all the time, but this is your weapon. Learn the art of a genuine smile that lights up your entire face. And that comes more naturally if you're a radiant Christian. So maybe you need to learn how to be a radiant, happy Christian. You might bring hundreds of people into the kingdom without ever realizing it and never knowing it until eternity. How many people were affected by your smiling, radiant face at the store and thought, that girl has something. We need to be mindful of this. Sometimes we're so self-satisfied with our own life and we go to the store and we never think about it. You know, we don't really care about the other people. That's the whole problem, and we just have our own glum expression. We need to have an open, receptive, friendly expression on our face that other people know this person is receptive to come to if I have questions. This is your mission field. A glad countenance does more than a lot of talking. Another thing to remember, be polite with your thank yous. Every time a man opens the door for you without, if you know him or not, be polite in your thank yous. Say thank you. And say it like you mean it, not just thanks, as you go past. Be a polite daughter of the king. Remember, you are God's ambassador. You will be like a breath of fresh air to others. Are you overwhelmed? I'm sorry if you are. There's just so many subjects I could try to squeeze in, the praying princess, and so many things that I'm excited about to share with my daughters, but I have to quit somewhere. And if you're overwhelmed, draw to Christ. The main thing is, you fill your puzzle piece with happiness with Christ, and He will teach you all things. You will hear a voice behind you saying, "This is the way, walk ye in it." I love you, and I am praying for you, and I feel privileged to be a part of a church with so many radiant princesses. Thank you.
If you need to leave, don't hesitate. If you have a time frame here where you're needing to leave, we won't be at all offended. I had a thought that stood out to me, Dora, something I've often wondered about. When we speak about flirting and our relationships with young men, with young girls, sometimes I, as an older woman, look at young ladies and I say, I think, don't you realize that this young man has a mother and a father who is observing you? If a young lady thinks by her over-persuasive manner and her over-friendliness and her little coyness and these little things that she's doing to attract attention toward my son or toward one of these other older sister's sons, don't you realize, young lady, that you are the very kind of young lady that we warn our sons about and that we will take our son aside and say, oh, we have a caution, you know, about this particular type of young lady. And they are not making that choice on their own to be appreciative of a young lady. We had an experience in our home when Daniel was, I'll pick on Daniel since he's married, when he was 16, a young lady came from another circle for Bible school. A very attractive, vivacious, friendly girl. At first sight, you just liked her because she was just very, very friendly. Well, it didn't take many hours in our home of her sitting on the floor playing with the little boys and her drawing on Daniel for Papa to take Daniel aside and say, I want you to know I'm not happy with this young lady's behavior. And Daniel, at age 16, may have been following her a bit. You know, he let her sweep him along, you know, in a few conversations, and he was being flattered. There's no doubt that, my, she's so appreciative of me, and she thinks I'm wonderful, and just in, you know, this short first evening there. But after that first night, Papa had a talk with Daniel and told him he needs to put a reserve. He needs to set a reserve that will discourage her behavior. But I have to think about it. I don't want to mention names because I don't want to put your mind on that, but you all know young men that are godly, and we as older women, you as younger women, you look and say, oh, what a godly young man. I appreciate him and his zeal for God and this and this and this, and you may even wonder what sort of young man God's going to bring your way. But in that, you must set a carefulness over your heart and realize that that godly young man has a mother and a father. And your little ways are probably exactly opposite of how that mother and father are going to lead him. So when you think about enjoying small pleasures for a season, as Dora has so carefully brought out many times, realize that you are building a reputation. And all of the mothers and fathers in our group, they are watching your life. And when it comes time to recommend a young lady to their son, that's not what they're going to recommend. So I say that with love and carefulness, and if you have some repenting to do in your heart in those areas, then we see that too, because we've all made mistakes. It's not that someone who has had failure will never be considered, but that's something good to be aware of. Do we have questions on this last session, or ones that have come up from previous sessions that you feel we should discuss, or are you ready to go home?
In looking back over these teachings several weeks later and just seeing some of the responses that came in, I just wanted to add a few notes because there is such varied responses to meetings like this. Some are overwhelmed. To those, I would like to say this. We are born again in such varied situations and times in life, and many of us did not hear teachings on true heart purity for a long time after we were born again. It is impossible to acquire mature convictions overnight. This is not sin. Sin becomes sin for you once you have heard truth, been convinced of it through God's Spirit, and then reject it. God only asks you to respond to truth one day and one thought at a time as He reminds you. Other girls are plagued with guilt and regrets over their past. Once you have asked Jesus to forgive you, you are justified. Justified means just as if it had never happened. You now have a totally clean sheet in front of you. Your past is forgotten, and your future is to be lived joyfully in the new knowledge that you have. Then there are others who feel judgmental towards others who do not measure up to these standards. I plead with you to remember that we come from so many different places, situations, and parents or home life. We have been saved at different places and times and are in different levels of growth in our walk with Christ. Remember that Christ wants modesty for you, His princess, but also remember that in His prayer for the future church, He never taught that the world would be won by it. He said that the world would be won by our love and understanding with each other. It is true, once we have lost the spirit and clothing of modesty, we have lost something very precious. But if we lose our love, we have lost something much, much more precious. The answer is not in laying down our convictions in order to be able to love, but to let Christ purify your heart and give you His spirit of love. Thank you.
God bless you for listening to the preaching of His word. You may leave us a message by pressing 99. To hear information about our Saturday morning Bible study, press 88. To find out how to listen to a church service at Ephrata Christian Fellowship, press 77. To hear the menu for this topic again, please stay on the line. To listen to any other message in this topic, press the appropriate extension number now.